Hello, thanks for joining us. It's another episode of Sacktown Talks with Scott Lay, and I'm Jabron Maciel. This week, we're joined by Jim Wood, assembly member for the 2nd District, which spans California's northern coast, from Santa Rosa to the Oregon border. We talk about his road to elected office, his role as the chair of the Assembly Health Committee, recovering from wildfires, and much, much more. We're almost ready to go, but first, let's pause for the cause. Yeah. This episode of the Sacktown Talks by the Nooner is brought to you by the Nooner's Classified Ads.
So we start off with Burton and the Brains. Burton, that's John Burton. The Burton and the Brains have moved.
Tell us about, what is that?
So that is John Burton's political consulting and event management organization with some of his former team members. And they've moved offices, so you can find out the information at aroundthecapitol.com/classifieds. We'll get back to that link in a moment. Let's listen to some of the other ones. What do you got, Javon?
Here we go. Senator Tony Atkins is looking for a digital and social media professional.
The California Gambling Control Commission is looking for a deputy director of legislation and regulatory affairs.
Meanwhile, UCLA Health seeks an associate director of government relations. That job is based in Los Angeles.
And in Oakland, the Center for Responsible Lending is looking for a policy and government affairs associate.
SEIU UHW is looking for a political coordinator in Oakland or Sacramento, California. And they are also seeking regional political organizers in the Los Angeles and San Francisco regions.
While McKinley and Pillows Fundraising is looking for administrative assistant here in Sacramento.
Capital Veteran of the Year luncheon is coming June 26. Pete Connedy, that's a good thing you're doing.
Good job, Pete. Pruitt Consulting is looking for a part-time fundraising associate here in Sacramento.
The digital and social media professional, Jose Solorio?
That's an error. That's an old ad that I left on there. Okay. So we'll just close out by noting that Political Data, longtime partner with the Nooner, we had Paul Mitchell on last week's pod. They continue to provide weekly trainings for their clients and others to learn about how to use their products in voter data and voter data management.
Yeah, and if you listen to Paul Mitchell's episode last week, you know, this is the guy, this is like getting trained by Yoda himself.
You know. Definitely one of our most listened to pods so far. So to find these classifieds and others, visit aroundthecapitol.com. That's around the capital with an O, aroundthecapitol.com/classifieds. You can also find information about how to get your classified on the web, in the Nooner, and on the pod at that site.
3, 2, 1. Special thanks again to Assemblymember Jim. 3, 2, 1. Special thanks again to Assemblymember Jim Wood, who came into studio with no staff or stump speech, no prepared talking points, and was very candid and open to talking about any of the important issues that are before him today. He's a true black belt in healthcare policy and California legislation generally, and just an all-around affable guy. I hope you enjoy our talk as much as I enjoyed meeting him. Okay, let's get started.
Oh, yeah.
Two, one. Boom, it's another episode of Sacktown.
Oh, it's beautiful outside. How great is it? I mean,
yeah, with Scott Lay, and I'm Jabron Maciel. We are here joined by Jim Wood, assembly member from the 2nd District. The 2nd District. Yeah. We are playing...
Come on, that's like one of the most beautiful districts in the entire state. Come on, we can't play favorites, but come on. You start like
I have favorites.
Around Santa Rosa, sure. You go to the Oregon border. Yeah. How much greater can you get than that?
Yeah. And so we're coming into Here Comes the Sun because it's April and the sun is finally starting to peer through, isn't it?
Oh, it's been beautiful.
Yeah, every time we had a rainstorm, I was just like, man, just one more storm to break my heart before summer is allowed
we'll
to set
in. We'll talk about it on a week later on this week when we record that. But I was up in the foothills to at a fundraiser for fire victims from the North State, and we'll get into that with Mr. Wood. But what an amazing, beautiful country we have up in Amador County, and certainly up in Mr. Wood's district as well.
Yeah.
So I spent the weekend up there. I'm like, and all week long they were saying, "Oh, it's going to rain! It's going to rain! It's going to rain!" oh my God, it was perfect up there. Thank you very much for saying it's going to rain, because nobody went up, and sadly, Daffodil Hill closed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
But, oh, it was wonderful. So, thumbs up to, I think it was Hanford House where we stayed, and, the great restaurant at Sutter Creek Hotel.
Oh, okay.
Or Sutter Hotel. So they have a great restaurant there. Just go up there, enjoy it. It's amazing.
Yeah, you look rejuvenated.
I do. I'm like a lot better. Yeah. LeBron knows. Like, we see each other way too much each week now. So
yeah. Jim Wood.
Yeah.
So hey, can I ask you a favor and just have to pull this up to yourself just a little bit closer? Maybe about
sure. How's that?
Oh man, you got a smooth voice, brother. Okay, so what I am going to ask you to do is to introduce yourself a little bit. I've actually, and I think this is really positive, I've had some lay folks who are not involved in politics, who are not in kind of like the California legislative world.
No lay as an offense.
No, Scott, Scott's relatives.
Not folks exes. Not Scott's exes. I've had some regular folks, which I think is so positive. Ask me, it's like, hey, who, you know, this is so cool. Like, I really feel a little bit more connected to our government mm-hmm. with what you're doing. So, Jim Wood, assembly member with the second assembly district.
Right.
Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about
the only dentist in the legislature.
The only dentist in the legislature. Right. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about sort of your district, how you got mm-hmm. started in politics, and sort of, you know, one thing I think is really interesting about being an assembly member is that the job is kind of what you make of it. You don't have to run any bills. You could not, right? But you've picked out your priorities. You've laid out your markers very mm-hmm. clearly. So maybe you can just kind of talk a little bit about that.
Wow. It's where do you start? My district. Wow. It is the largest assembly district of any Democrat. It's huge. It starts in the middle.
Most beautiful.
I say that too. I say it all the time, and I get, you know, people roll their eyes at me.
I live in downtown Sacramento. It is the most beautiful.
So. I will match my district against Sacramento, and I like Sacramento. I really do.
Yeah, Kevin, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. But it's a beautiful district. It starts in the middle of Santa Rosa, and it goes to the Oregon border, and it includes Trinity County, which is a huge county with not a lot of people. So we've got five counties, Sonoma, Mendocino, Humboldt, Del Norte, and Trinity County. And I tell people this is kind of like...
Which is your favorite?
You love all your children equally. Yeah, that's exactly how it is. So, but they're all different. And I tell people my district is like five children from five different mothers because the socioeconomics, the economies are completely different in each county. So they have their own personalities. And, you know, I have from one end of the political spectrum to the other, I have people that are libertarian, strong Republican, to ultra-progressive. And so the balancing act for that is a real challenge. So
you literally have a
microcosm of California.
Right, and the tsunami part of California.
Too, yeah, you know, absolutely.
I drive through that area, yeah. And it's like, oh, there's like tsunami signs.
I laughed the first time I saw that. I go, what the heck these things? And then you
go back. Very different from Santa Rosa.
You go back and you do your research. And, you know, 1964 was a bad year because we had a tsunami in Crescent City. And then we had another one, I think it was 2011. And did a lot of damage. And so so I used to see these tsunami signs. I actually have one in my office, tsunami hazards area.
I get you. Warning get to your office.
Yeah.
When are we going to go there?
When are we going to go there?
One of these times.
Yeah. Okay. You should come to my office sometime. So
yeah.
So I didn't get into this in the traditional way, I guess, or I don't know what the traditional way is, but you know, you have a lot of people who become staffers and then they become legislators. But I didn't do that. I'm a dentist. I practiced in the little town of Cloverdale, which is in the northern part of Sonoma County,
where you make a left turn to go to Mendocino.
Exactly.
Well, there's a good Mexican place, I think.
There's a good, great hamburger stand. Hamburger Ranch is right there. So I continue. I practiced dentistry there for 27 years. But in the middle of that, early in my career, I started getting interested in healthcare issues just in general. Started getting involved in my local dental society and gradually worked into things.
More healthcare or local government issues that got you involved?
It was health policy issues and just the challenges you have in a rural area. And that essentially my district is a rural district. Unlike unlike most of the a large percentage of my colleagues who are in the Democratic caucus who have large who are in large urban areas, mm-hmm. My district size wise is much more like you would see for a Republican district, uh-huh. and so and the issues are in many ways a lot of them are pretty similar. So
and that's the actually very typical in what we see in California. This is what happened in, say, 1876, mm-hmm. the Rocky Chavez seat, mm-hmm. which flipped to Dems. But, you know, it is a moderate district mm-hmm. where they care a lot about issues like healthcare.
Right.
And so it flipped this year. It's a very vulnerable district for Democrats going forward because mm-hmm. you know, it's a moderate district, but it cares about issues like healthcare that yeah. you're talking about. And that's very similar, like, you know, to the North Coast, any of the coastal areas. Yeah. We see that in Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo,
right.
anywhere along the coast. There's an agriculture, you know, familiarity and love of kind of a moderate position. Mm-hmm. But on the issues like healthcare, choice, et cetera, they're
very much
progressive.
Yeah. And I think part of it is the inland part of my district and the coastal part of my district is a bit of a divide there as well. It's a very interesting mix. And I love the diversity of it. It challenges me every day. And
well, I joked in, I think it was 2013 about, it was April Fool's Day. So, yeah, I've done a few April Fool's jokes over the years. And so I think it was April 13. I said that the California Supreme Court said that all districts had to be east-west.
Oh.
And, you know, and I bring it up because it's like perfect to talk about because people are like, oh, well, these districts are gerrymandered. No, you have a community of interest. It is a North Coast district.
It is.
And it stretches from the north side of Santa Rosa, all the way up the Oregon border, mm-hmm. you would have no more of a community of interest if it swallowed parts of Redding. Mm-hmm. And that's what some people suggest. They're like, oh, it should go east-west. And I joked about it in April Fool's for, I think it was 2013. It's like, you don't belong in Redding. And we'll get to the fires mm-hmm. soon, but
sure.
you got awfully close to Redding. Mm-hmm. But it's important to understand that there really is a community of interest all the way up the coast
yeah.
from Crescent City in Del Norte, not Del Norte, you people. It's Del Norte.
Wait,
don't screw
pretty
that
quiet.
Shit
He's pretty quiet
up.
Over here.
I'm, like, well, I'm just
Scott's
like,
on just, Scott's on one today.
So. He's on a roll. I don't
Scott's
know.
On a roll. So you know, I try not to. You know,
he had too good a weekend.
Del Norte.
Yeah. I don't want to paint over the Mona Lisa here. You know, but you know, so for folks listening, I think the idea is, you know, from the layperson's perspective. You kind of, and you know, this is really where I think you can get a little bit uncomfortable and say, you know, I won't say playing God, but something like it, because you're saying, okay, you want communities that are like each other. You want communities of interest, communities that are like each other, who you would presume to have most in common, to be represented by one person. So, and that's the term, right? Communities of interest. Mm-hmm. The problem, I think, that makes some people like me squeamish, is like, well, you start like, upon what basis? Upon basis of race? Well, that really only magnifies the sort of salad bowl, not the melting pot that we have, mm-hmm. you know? And so, for folks that are listening that, you know, are tuning in because they want to connect with their government or they just find it interesting. That's the whole idea, right? So you draw community. So that's so you kind of get these districts that look like narrow strips, in this case, a narrow strip along the coast. But hey, those coastal communities have a lot in common, you know?
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite, do you have Bolinas?
No, that's in Mark Levine's district.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
Bolinas is the town that the sign keeps disappearing.
Yeah.
You know,
those are freaky people. Yeah. Good surf, freaky people.
I was just like literally looking at hotels and deciding which district am I going to stay in May. Right. It's like, oh, is it Mr. Levine's district or Mr. Wood's yeah. district?
Hey, so
it's kind of close.
What was the process like for you? What was the process like? So you're pissed off about healthcare policy. Are you saying, hey, you know, maybe not pissed off, but hey, I can make a difference here,
yeah.
right? Do you go immediately to it's time to run for office? What was the kind of trigger for you? When did you realize like, hey, I think it's time for me to run?
You know, actually, I was in local government for 8 years too. So I got – I got interested in healthcare policy and did a lot of work as a volunteer with the California Dental Association here.
Okay.
Went across the street and lobbied on bills and got interested. Got interested in the political part of it, our political action committee, right. Looking at candidates. How do we find candidates that we could find that would be proactive on healthcare issues, moving the dental agenda, really, essentially, forward. But in the middle of that,
you know, usually with the California Medical Association, you're generally aligned, right?
No.
Okay.
Not today.
If you're not familiar, for our listeners, you're not familiar with healthcare policy, that shit is great, Craig.
So what happened?
Yeah. So I'm one of these people, I start building on things and I don't give things up. So the idea was, you know, I'm spending a lot of time away from home. Maybe I should be doing something more locally. So I got appointed to my planning commission, little city of Healdsburg.
Oh, cool.
And from there, I was in there for a couple of years and someone said, you got to run for city council. And I honestly hadn't thought about it until someone said, hey, you know, you should do that. And I did. So I ran for city council in 2006 and was elected. Ran in 2010 for re-election. So I spent 8 years on the city council. I got to about 2011, 12, I guess, in that time period, and started watching closely what was going on at the state level, realizing that the assembly member, Wes Chesbrough, my predecessor, was going to be turned out. The dean, yeah, exactly. Sorry. One of
he
was a great member.
I'm not saying he was a vampire, but he looks like a vampire. He's like straight out of like Dust Till Dawn with the hair slicked back and the bulk. Wes Chesbrough, man, I got love for you. You just had a cool look, man.
But for those of us who have been around for 25
come on
years,
the show, man.
Like, what a Wes cool is guy. One of those guys. You're just like
one of the total environmental leaders, too.
Awesome.
Yeah. Women leaders. Just
yeah.
Like, oh,
he's
my
great.
God.
Yeah. He's great.
That's exactly what we want to have. Yeah. And I think Mr. Wood's doing a pretty damn good job to fill his shoes.
Yeah. Wow, they're big shoes. Not physically big. But,
yeah.
You know, so
Wes told you to run? Or?
No, nobody told me to run.
Not told you, but you know, kind of encouraged you?
No, not at all. No, nobody encouraged me to run. As a matter of fact, there were no sitting legislators who said, hey, you ought to run. For me, it was like, look, I think I got one shot at this because the way term limits change, you can serve up to 12 years. And then if you're there for a while and you do a decent job, you know, there's a pretty good chance you're going to get reelected. Right. So I kind of said, you know, I'm going to give this a go. Yeah. And I decided I just kind of set the wheels in motion.
What was your race like?
It was, I started really early. I started really, really early. And I started meeting people. And the thing about being a local elected, which is really helpful, is you get to meet city council members and boards of supervisors for where you live. And then because of those relationships, you can then, you know, it's easy to introduce yourself to other electeds in other cities, right? I'm a city council member from Healdsburg and you're talking to someone in Ukiah. Oh, I'll meet with you and talk to you. And so you kind of, you use your relationships and you begin to build from there. And so I began to learn fairly early on the issues of different counties. And that's when I was like, wow, each county is different. And so I spent a lot of time doing that. I declared fairly early, I guess. I can't even remember when. It's been a while now. And it was an open seat. So open seats are going to attract more candidates. So I attracted another Democrat, a Republican, and a Green Party candidate. And so there were four of us.
I'm trying to remember whose seat that was, because Wes was already in the Senate.
No, it was Wesley's assembly seat. Yeah, he served in the Senate for 8 years first,
okay.
And then
was
2 years out. Patty Berg.
And then you and Mark Levine were among the first tests of do assembly members try to go up to the Senate under the new term limits law?
Well,
because that was kind of a question of like, okay, well, you know, I have 12 years either in the assembly or the Senate, and to assembly members try to change the color of the carpet, even though the salary is the same. Term limits are the same.
I like green.
And members have said, no, I don't care. There's no upper house, lower house anymore.
Yeah, I guess I don't see it that way, quite frankly. I see that the Senate's 40 and the Assembly's 80. And actually, we have a big family. They have a smaller 61 family.
61 Democrats.
It's a big house. It's a big house. But I was actually elected in 14. So
that's right.
So it was an open seat for me. And then Noreen Evans, who was the senator, decided not to run. I'd already declared I was running for the assembly.
She ran for a supervisor in Sonoma County.
So I decided, you know what, I've committed to go this path. I'm not going to change. And then I'm happy I stayed where I did.
And both of you did that. I mean, it was like, okay, no. And they set the stage for this concept that, You know what? The Assembly and the Senate are basically in parity now with the new term limits. There's no upper house, lower house, just different color carpet, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Are you still practicing? Are you still practicing dentist?
Not traditional practice any longer. I still
volunteer or something.
I do forensic consulting.
Like beats the crap out of people on the assembly floor.
That's funny. They,
you know. No, I do get people who ask me, you know, hey, you know, I got this going on. What do you think? Or you know, my child's going to have some treatment, and this is what they're recommending. Does that seem reasonable? You know, it's like, well, you know, I don't have any X-rays. I haven't seen your child, but I do get people ask me. So, but the dentistry I do. I keep my license is active, so I could go back tomorrow if I needed to. But
the reason I ask is because you know, this is always a constant peeve of mine, was the SACB or Walters or someone will run a negative story about, you know, these legislators are making $130,000 plus per diem, et cetera, et cetera. And they'll kind of get down on the compensation.
Most could do a lot better in the private sector.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, for you, this was presumably a pay cut.
It was.
Like substantial.
It was.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's, you know, in a lot of ways, there's almost like two types of legislators. Was, is being an assembly member the highest paid job you've ever had or not? You know, because that kind of informs the type of flexibility that you have
to be your own man,
you know, you don't need this. You have something to go back to, where there's any number of legislators that we can point to and be like, well, you'd probably go try and lobby after this or go be a union organizer.
There are a lot of members who are former staffers.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, so some of us, not put myself in that boat. Like,
yeah.
And so I guess this is our world.
Yeah, I guess so. So all I'm saying is that why, you know, 130,000, it's 130,000, right? That's,
it's 100 and, I don't know, some change and then per diem.
So yeah. It's public information, folks. Yeah, so
you can look it up.
You can look it up. The reason, you know, it's still,
you check in on Fridays before 3-day weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more than most folks would make, but I just want folks to know, you know, you kind of have to do that. Otherwise, you know, if it was too much less, you wouldn't be able to serve, or it'd be too great a sacrifice. You'd be like, oh, I'm essentially disqualified from this because I still have a family, right?
Particularly in living in districts like Mr. Woods. You're talking about, you know, people, and I like to give crap about the check-in sessions on Fridays before 3-day weekend, but you're talking about members that are renting places in Sacramento, and, you know, I'm a renter here in Sacramento. It ain't cheap.
Yeah, last I checked, like, a lot of these members aren't balling.
No.
Except, I mean, unless you read the LA Times, Tony Atkins is balling.
Yeah, I mean, the folks aren't. I mean, Wendy Carrillo's in El Salvador right now with Governor Newsom.
Yeah.
She ain't balling in El Salvador. So.
Yeah. Hey, so should we get into some bills?
Yeah, well, let's – okay, so you're chair of probably – the most meaningful bill in the legislature this session, which is Assembly Health Committee. So that's before kind. We get into your bills, I mean, like, okay, so what is it like to be the chair of such an important committee where you have folks on, you know, on the left in the Democratic caucus are saying, let's have, you know, our own individual mandate. You have, we'll talk about dialysis before you. You have rate regulations or rate publications. I was watching, I forget whose bill it was. I was watching it last week or so. You know, huge issue before your committee. Yeah. What's that like? How did you, I mean, obviously you have a healthcare background. Mm-hmm. But how do you get tapped to be the chair of that committee, and what is it like?
Was that something you asked for?
Like, it is, yeah. And some days you feel like, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
But I love it. I really do.
You do a great job.
Well, that's kind. So some days it's pretty challenging.
I watch a lot of hearings. It's 25 years here in Sacramento. I've watched a lot of hearings, and you do one of the best jobs.
Well, it's challenging to try to be balanced. And, you know, I think for me, part of it's all about communication and trying to be respectful of people. Yeah. In my profession, I had to, you know, the idea is that you take care of somebody and you want them to come back, you know?
Right.
And so you do that by trying to find a way to connect to people. Mm. And how I do that with my colleagues, with and I, you know, it's harder from the dais when you're running a meeting trying to figure out how the heck, you know, what's going on. But I love
you, it. You don't have to be Patrick O'Donnell with Kevin Kiley. I don't know if you saw that here.
I didn't. I heard a lot about it. So we haven't. It's interesting. We haven't had that kind of interaction.
Your committee has been a little tamer.
It's different. It was it was bigger when I started. I asked for a smaller committee.
It's a pretty small committee.
It's 15. Well, it's compared relatively to some of the others.
Yeah, you don't need to have 20 people on the committee.
That's no, stupid. And it was 19 when I started. And I wanted 13. So the speaker and I did this back and forth. He said, well, 15. And I said, okay, I'll live with 15. And I mean, I'm happy.
That's just, you know, the speaker's trying to, well, why is the committee so big? He's trying to spread the constituency of dollars for the members.
This is a real problem with only 19 Assembly Republicans.
Yeah.
You have to, like, spread assignments, because otherwise, you know, just in
it's gonna have these, each of these reaps are serving on like four committees,
right? Yeah. Well, that's a real problem. Is that like the Republicans were having to serve on so many committees that it wasn't rational, anymore.
So I love the committee, but it is you know, you go into it. I have a healthcare background, so I own my own small business as a practice. Had spent time on healthcare policy with the Dental Association. Had local government experience. I had a variety of different things walking in the door. Nothing really prepared me for what I was going to find when I was appointed chair. The breadth of things in healthcare is far beyond what I expected. And when you go back and look at historically the number of people who have served in the position I'm in, because of the way term limits was before, you actually had people who were there only for a year or so. Right. And so I started my fourth year in this position, and I'm already like the longest serving healthcare chair in the last 15 years. So with that comes the ability to
you get to chip away at issues over time.
Yeah, right? that's really the bottom line.
And as a provider, really you're kind of, so you have normally the providers, you have the individual.
You're talking about your three-legged stool.
Yeah, I mean, you have these different. You have labor over on this side. Yeah.
Now the stool's bigger now.
Yeah, okay, we were like five legs to the stool, but you're kind of right in the middle.
A lot of it, yeah.
As a direct provider, and we've seen that a lot. I think in watching the committee over this year, it's like you have a different perspective than an insurer, than a direct provider. And so that's when you can actually differ, even though you're a member of the California Dental Association. You might differ from the medical association.
Well, what's interesting is that the other, you certainly have your own perspective as a practitioner and a provider, but you have another perspective as a policy wonk, and you have another perspective as a chair. And you have another perspective as a, hey, what can we get through the, you know, what can, as a realist, right? Like what's, because you've managed this committee now for 4 years. And so can you just tell us.
With a rural district.
Yeah.
Which is important also.
So can you just tell us from your chair's perspective, what are some of these sort of recurrent issues that you've kind of have on, you probably have some on the list, right? Like what are some of these issues that you've seen, oh, I'd love to tackle them before my time is up, or kind of these issues that you kind of have on the list, like, oh, these are the things that we need to chip away at. And then I think from that, we can segue into a discussion like what your personal priorities are.
You know, I think for me, it is about, I think what interests a lot of us in the state of California is I want to get healthcare to as many people as possible. So I tended early on to look at it much more through the rural lens because of that was my experience. But you know, you also find that underserved communities in large urban areas as well. And for me, that was a big light bulb. And once I that light bulb, when I was realized, oh, well, now I can connect with some of the folks in these large urban areas because they've got the same problems. We think about it differently.
Guerneville looks a lot like parts of East Los Angeles.
Well, not right now. We had a flood in Guerneville, so it's a little, wet. So, but
I mean, from a healthcare perspective,
Well, there's challenges, and so
different.
For me, it is about fundamentally, you know, how do we get as much care to people as we can? That's affordable, that's high quality. So when we actually say now you've got access to healthcare, you actually do, because the big challenge we have in a lot of areas is we don't have people to take care of people. And that's one of those battles that I continue to fight. And it's just too expensive. It really is. And that's why I've been so passionate about drug prices and anything related to the pharmaceutical industry. And it, you know, it for me, what bugs me is that when I see people, I feel like when their groups or whatever, they're kind of gaming the system. And it's like, you know what? We kind of got a set of rules. And I really don't like it when people find ways around that, you know, to game the system. And because at the end of the day, you've got consumers, you got people out there that need these services, and they're having to pay more because somebody's figured out how to get around it. And that frustrates me. And part of it at the core, and this kind of goes back to how I got and how what drives me personally is like, look, I didn't grow up in a wealthy family. I didn't, you know, and I'm not crying poor. My folks weren't super poor. But we didn't grow up and I didn't have a lot. I started working really early on because, you know, we had a choice to go in the store. It's like, well, mom could afford these jeans. I wanted these jeans. I was like, well, then you're going to have to figure out how to do that on your own.
Better buckle up,
you know? And so for me, I've always worked really, really hard because I wanted something different. And so my first home I remember it was a single wide trailer. That was home. And and so some people say, oh, you know, they look at me and they say, oh, you're
the white man, Dennis.
Successful, whatever. Yeah. But I worked my butt off to get everything I got and I continue to do that. And so that's what most, you know, after having had a successful practice, wanting to come here and actually give back and hopefully create an atmosphere where other people can be successful. That's why I'm here.
You know, I mean, just to touch on that, I think that's part of what's so unfortunately divisive about the sort of like the cultural Marxism of the modern Democratic Party and identity politics is that, you know, some people would hold that against you, that you are a white man, that you are a dentist, you know, and in reality, you grew up in, it sounds like, rural poverty. And
it wasn't
not extreme poverty.
No, it wasn't poverty. It wasn't. We were working class.
Yeah,
you know,
but that's why we're proud of Tony Atkins. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, same reason we're proud of Tony Atkins, right? Exactly.
Appalachia.
So proud of her, man. What a phenomenal story she has, right?
Yeah, it's not just found in California.
Yeah, yeah. I guess all I'm trying to say is that, like, the real divisions aren't, you know, color of your skin. The real divisions are really like rural, urban, and wealthy and poor, or wealthy and working class, you know? And I think that a lot of this, you know, modern talk of social justice kind of discounts the struggles that someone like you or your family went through. Cause all they see is skin, you know, it just kind of bugs me, you know, but anyways, that's not what we're here to talk about.
Yeah. Let's talk a little about the district because, you know, I was over the interim. I was having dinner with Assemblymember Mark Levine, who has the Assembly District just south of Mr. Yeah. Wood's district. And I was like, so was the fire, the Tubbs fire in 2017, was that in your district? He's like, no, it observed political lines.
Wow. No.
So it was your district.
Yeah, the Tubbs
and
fire.
And, you know, many of us have friends that lost houses in Tubbs fire. So how is the north part of Santa Rosa doing? And what can we do going forward to help these communities, prevent them? And if we want to get into PG&E, we can do that shit as well. Excuse me. Sorry.
Wow. That's a pretty huge palette of stuff we can talk about
this
there.
This is a 4-hour podcast.
God.
Well, you know, we don't want you to feel like Shanghai, but I mean, to the extent that you want to talk about.
No, I'm happy to. Want anything you want to talk about, I'm happy to talk about.
I didn't even look to see if you voted for or not the PG&E quote bailout bill, which was last day of session, SB 901.
I was on the group. I was on the conference committee. I'll talk about that.
Let's start with the fires and then kind of
because it all ties together.
It's good stuff.
So the fires, October 8th, happened. It started in Calistoga and it kind of roared over the hill, but it wasn't just there. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. There were other fires. At one point, there were like 17 different fires or more even that all combined. And then there was also a pretty catastrophic fire that happened up in Mendocino County.
Mendocino Complex, right?
No, that was later. That was in 2018.
That was, Mendocino Complex was 2017. And then there was another one in 2018. There were two different, I looked that crap up. I don't know.
So we we lost like 350 homes in Mendocino County. 8 people died in Mendocino County. And then in my district and the Tubbs fire, we had 22 people die in the Santa Rosa area. So the fire came through and just roared across there and destroyed almost 6,000
homes. It's
important
for our listeners to understand. Like, so Mr. Wood's district starts from north Santa Rosa all the way to the Oregon border.
Right, right.
I mean, this is an enormous district.
Yeah.
So these fires that you think, oh, they're rural fires.
Well, no.
He's like, urban Santa Rosa,
no, Santa
all the
Rosa
way
got
up.
It. Yeah,
Rona, yeah, we got
and
it.
And some Rona of our Park most beautiful
yeah.
parts of California.
Oh, we got nailed. We got absolutely nailed. Yeah. Yeah. And interesting, you know, aside, the interesting part of this fire was this fire followed almost the exact same footprint of a fire in 1964. Mm-hmm. The difference there was that fire then took 5 days to develop in this, but most of the damage that happened with this particular fire happened in a very, very short amount of time. It jumped the freeway and destroyed 1,300 plus homes in a neighborhood, Kmart.
Not unlike Camp in Shasta County, which is like blew up overnight.
Well, this was the first one. I mean, this really was the first big catastrophic fire since the Oakland Hills fire. And so it caught everybody. You know, as we go forward, we then in December had the fire in Santa Barbara County. So we started becoming this repository for information. To
December,
try to
not fire season.
No, not fire
this
season
is the
at
whole
all.
Change of, you know, how we understand fires.
So, and nobody knew, we didn't know what we were doing. And
that
and
happened in 2018 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2018.
2018 as well. Right. So we started gathering information to help. And that's the big role for us is to, how can we facilitate? And what we've been doing mostly is just, okay, how do we help with the recovery, which is helping to get the houses rebuilt and those and help people recover as much from insurance and those kinds of things. And those continue to be huge challenges.
And generally speaking, Santa Rosa, in contrast with Shasta County, the car mm-hmm. fire, I mean, Santa Rosa had better insurance. The average homeowner had better insurance than they did in the Camp Fire, from what I understand.
You know, I different, certainly different, right. Different communities. And it's hard to say. I don't know about, you know, I have to ask Mr. Gallagher about the
well,
Camp Fire.
I mean, one thing we can probably say is that, you know, the disparity in resources are certainly magnified by disaster.
Yeah.
Right. And job availability. So when you had like, you know, a bunch of jobs gone and the Tubbs fire, there were in the Camp Fire, there were fewer opportunities. So you had more relocation down to the Sacramento Valley.
Well, you know, I mean, I think what a lot of these fires are doing is hastening the demise of a lot of these communities where like the industrial base is left. I mean, I hate to say it, but like in a lot of the party's over, right. You know, but there's still some folks hanging on kind of, you know, supported by, you know, just kind of getting by how they can. Mm-hmm. And then, hey, the fire comes in and that's kind of like, I mean, paradise is gone and it might not come back.
And we think about
Santa Rosa will be back.
Well, no, Santa Rosa has an economic base. Right. Santa Rosa
has a university,
you know, university
wine and restaurants.
Yeah, no,
but there was a lot of pain there.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was more relocation opportunities for displaced people than there were in the Camp Fire.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really know how many people left at this point. We will have a better idea when the census comes because
we really don't want that.
We
don't
know
can
a lot of people were displaced.
Years?
Yeah. Yeah. So
let's talk about that. Paul Mitchell.
And so I did, you know, so that was my, obviously focused on that particular fire. And at the time that was the largest fire in the history of the state. Yeah. And then in December, that became the Thomas Fire, and that became the largest fire. And then last summer, the River and Ranch fires combined to be the largest fire in the history of the state, and which it still is. It's over 500,000 acres.
We were talking on Twitter at the time. It was like, oh my God.
It's huge. It's
these
huge.
These two enormous fires are like coming together because you had mm-hmm. you know, Lake County. And people in Northern California, and I'm a Southern California guy, I'm like, we don't understand Northern California, but like all of a sudden you had these fires coming right next to each other mm-hmm. yeah. in these amazing places. I mean, I've done a houseboat on Shasta Lake. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Mendocino, Fort Bragg, I mean, in Mr. Wood's district. But we don't put it all together. We put it together when it's fires.
Yeah. So you're, so we step back and we say, hey, we've got all this confluence of events, these, you know, the biggest fires, the warmest years, mm-hmm. you know, the, you know, sort of a reimagining of what we would call fire season to really mm-hmm. be 12 months long. And that's when you step back from a policy perspective in your role on the working group, mm-hmm. and say, okay, what's our response, you know, from a policy perspective, right? And then, you know, part of this, of course, is, you know, what are we going to do about our utilities,
right?
So you talked a little bit about sort of recovery and insurance, and I think the other piece of it is probably, you know, forest management, if there's anything mm-hmm. to be done there. And then our utilities. So do you want to kind of pick it up from there?
Yeah, well, I'll go back to the, late last year, the speaker called me into his office and said, hey, you know, I'd like you to consider, would you consider serving on this committee? He says, it could be a blessing or a curse. He says, I don't know how it's going to work out for you, but you will be in the middle of a fair amount of controversy.
That's how every conversation.
Yeah, conversation that's our world. It's like,
Speaker Rendon.
Hey, this is going to be a blessing or a curse.
Blessing or curse.
Hey, good of him to be honest.
Well, no, it's honest. And Anthony and I have a very good relationship. Yeah. We're a very strong relationship. But
we like him.
So we sat. So I said, so what do you have in mind? He said, well, we're putting together a conference committee to look at wildfire. The wildfire stuff, and would you be willing to serve on that? And I said, yeah, I said I would. And so I ended up on the conference committee. And reality was, I was like one of the only people that had no background in utilities. I'm on the health committee, but I also represented the community that had lost the most at the time, as far as lives and. And so I learned a lot about utilities, a lot more than I ever expected to.
And you have a lot of constituents that are
pissed off.
Yeah, skeptical, pissed off, flaming mad. I mean, whatever. I mean, that's bad choice of words. I'm sorry, but really, really pissed off, yeah. and feel taken advantage of, and so I ended up on this committee, and as I learned more about the utilities. What I started to focus on was the prevention and what can we do at a statewide level. And so I started talking with Brian Dolly, to the east of me. And because he had just experienced the Carr fire, 1,000 homes, 1,000 homes burned there.
Most destructive fire in California history.
Yeah. The Carr fire. Carr fire. Sorry, so that was fire. Before, because so the campfire camp. Didn't yeah. happen until November.
Because people don't think, I mean, so Mr. Wood's district goes up the coast, but kind of shares the I don't know what you call it, the redwood forests.
Yeah, so I'm trying not to share with anybody. I want those forests in the Northern California
I mean, the west side. So yeah. When you drive on Highway 120 through
Lake
over
County
to and, Fort Bragg
yeah.
in Lake County,
yeah,
that's all redwood forest. Yeah. It starts in Redding.
And yeah.
Some people say, well, let's put this, some Democrats, like, oh, this should be one district. I'm like, you really want to put Mendocino and Fort Bragg in with Redding? Seriously?
So anyway. What happened with Brian Dolly?
Brian and I started talking and, I had 20 something people die in Santa Rosa area. I had, 8 people die in Mendocino County. Brian had, 7 or 8 people die in Redding area. And I started focusing on what we can do to prevent this because I was particularly concerned about the loss of life and the loss of property. And, so I started focusing on, okay, what can we do? How do we get resources to help with prevention? And that's where Brian and I became, you know, they called it the Dollywood plan. They literally called it Dollywood. And we started to figure out how can we get resources to going forward to help with vegetation management. And so we yeah. started looking at what are the impediments to doing this? What can we get? We went back to a legislative analyst, a report that said that we should be spending about $280 million a year for a long time. You know, I don't know how long, but a long time to do this. And so I said, I want $300 million a year.
Wow.
And I wanted to come from the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. So we put all this money from cap and trade into this fund.
Well, I mean, that seems appropriate.
Well, you know, it does,
and
but
not just
there was a lot of pushback. There was a huge amount of pushback.
That, you know, because you got this giant cookie jar and everyone's trying to put their hand in it.
That's exactly what it is.
But, you know, so, I always felt like there's like the speaker and the pro tem and the governor and the LA, you know, not the LA, but the Department of Finance have always had this like hands off the budget. Just like, you know, I mean, they don't even tell you what bill it's going to be in until the last minute, right? Like you are not allowed to know. You're just going to vote for it and you're going to sit down, you're going to shut up. But hey,
How do you really feel about Ron?
Anyways, but you know, and so this new pot of money is created. And they say, and everyone's want to, you know, I remember they're trying to do bank shots, right? It's like they're trying to do, like, at one point they're trying to do like bus passes for inner city kids for, you know, from the GGHF,
GGRF,
from the GGRF fund. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, come on, guys, it's got to be something. But yeah, I mean, there's a direct correlation between carbon being released into the environment through, you know, through the burning of wood and the GGRF. So it, to me, like at first glance, that seems totally appropriate.
Yeah, but it's not. It wasn't.
You've internalized the words of your masters.
Frustrated, very frustrated by that.
Kidding,
so very, very frustrated by that. It's like, no, look, you know, and we don't even measure how much carbon is blown up in the atmosphere when these catastrophic fires. And that
talk about setting us back 15 years.
Well, and that was my point. And that's became the mantra all along. It's like, look, you know, what's happening here is that we're blowing off more carbon with these catastrophic fires than we are through all the gas pipe or the tailpipes and things in the state. So why are we not measuring this? Why are we not spending the money? And what really pissed me off, quite frankly, was that I started looking at the expenditures from the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, and we spent about 4% on
actual greenhouse gas reduction
on this kind of on prevention stuff for forestry stuff. And I said, this is ridiculous. So I said, I want $300 million a year. And that became my message. And we didn't get $300 million. We got $200 million. But the significant thing for me was, and what turned the tide for us is people kept saying, you're not going to get this. You're going to kill this whole thing because you're not going to get this. I said, no, I think we're going to get it. Was actually a meeting with the governor. Mm-hmm. And I walked in, and we walked in and sat down and said, this is what I want to do, and this is why I want to do it. And he said, that makes sense.
The new governor,
no,
right?
Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown. He says, no, that makes sense. And he kind of looked. He looked at his staff, and they, you know, they really didn't react much. But because I think people knew that the political part of this, once you start moving into this fund, then people get concerned about the money. So, but he agreed. He said, no, you're right. And so at that point, we were at $190 million, and I was only able to squeeze out another 10. But $200 million a year for 5 years, $1 billion. And it really was.
Hey, that's pretty good.
It's not bad. It's not bad. But it really was a collaborative, bipartisan effort. I think the world of Brian, and we hung tough on it.
Hey, so talking about fire prevention, I think this is one of those things where people just want to push back. Of course, on the Trump administration, the whole raking thing, right? And I guess I just wanted to ask you, we probably don't need to rake, but from a fire prevention standpoint, are there techniques and stuff that we've left on the table that we're not exploring?
I think that we want to put everything on the table here,
right?
And so I think that. You know, it's funny. I see a picture of a rake. I had someone who's actually an insurance guy up in the Reading area. Who's a friend, and he said, you know, the raking thing isn't that crazy. He says, let me show you the rake that they use in these other countries.
Oh, it's like this crazy.
It's like a bulldozer with teeth on it. It's like, oh, that's not the rake that I was thinking.
That's why I get so pissed off at these anti. You know, I'm a never Trump guy myself, but it's like, if you're gonna hate Trump, hate him rationally. There's probably some stuff that could be done. You know,
but it's just in your rush to take a shit on the guy. A rational debate about clearing the forest floor, because the forest floor also is
part of the
Let's hear it.
Yeah, so I think we need to have a lot of things on the table. And right now, so I'm not terribly patient by nature. So matter of fact, that's one of the things that drives people crazy.
You belong in the assembly.
It's like, so what are we doing? What are we doing here? And so I want to push more on prevention, and that's what I'm working on this year is a prevention bill. I don't want to see more people die. And I will tell you this,
I think that's fair.
And you may or may not know this, but when we were in this first hearing, one of the first hearings, and we had the chairman of the PUC there talking, and he said, you know, I said, we need more action. We need you to move faster on these fire prevention plans, because that was part of what we were working on. The governor put out a proposal. We want the utilities to do a fire prevention plans. And I said, I don't want to be 4 years, 5 years from now and nothing be done.
Which is so often the case.
And you know, the chair of the PUC said, well, it's our job to slow things down. And I just about came out of my chair and over the dais because I was so upset about that.
Was that Michael Picker?
Yes. And I said, you don't understand. People are dying. I don't want to see any more people die. And for me, it was personal because
that's your district.
But I also identified those people.
Oh, fuck.
So that's what I, that was what I did through, after the fires.
Oh, because through dental records?
Yeah. That's
oh,
what
my
I,
God.
So that was what my that was what I did. And so for me, this became deeply personal. Deeply
Dude,
personal.
Way to bury the lead. I didn't know that. That's crazy.
So, but I just don't want to see more people die. And, you know, fast forward to the campfire, I helped out there helping identify those victims as well. And what I, what is so frustrating is how do we, how do you instill the urgency there? Because, you know, you had 86 people die.
So are we better now than we were?
Not yet.
Before 2017, not yet. 2018.
Yeah, I mean, have the, have the rakes come out? Are we doing more clearing? I mean, what's the
I want to give, you know, major kudos to Governor Newsom. He said that they've identified 35 projects that they're going to, that they're working on simultaneously to actually, that are, these are high risk fire areas. They're out there on the ground.
Working clear
on
stuff project. Out.
Yeah, cleaning stuff up and, yeah, and doing some of these projects.
Is any of the stuff is slowed down by like overregulation, environmental review, stuff like that?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it just goes to reason. I, you know, like we had a John Laird on here the other day. He was like, no, how could it be? Like, it's like, yeah, of course.
You know, I am a very, very strong environmentalist. I feel very, very passionate about it.
Well, just look at where you represent. Of course.
I represent most beautiful. Thank you yeah. for Scott, the most beautiful districts in the state. And it's not going to stay that way if we're not strict about that. Yeah. But there are times I think things get in the way. And things just take a little too long. And so part of what we were doing in that conference committee was like, we need, for the sake of protecting lives and property, we need to streamline some of this stuff. Yeah. And that's what we did.
A lot of it has to do with how do you incentivize private landowners?
We need private landowners to change behavior.
That's actually the bigger issue, frankly, most of your district, as well as Mr.
Yeah,
Dolly's
a lot of this
district.
Environmental review it's, stuff is.
But it's a lot
is make
of,
work.
I was watching Shark Tank the other day, and like on Shark Tank,
I didn't even watch
Kevin,
what is that?
We don't need to get into Shark Tank.
It's sorry, it's a business, you know, buying into companies. And so Kevin, the asshole on there, and he was talking about he has new land and he needs to have a drone to fly over it to understand what land needs to be, you know, taken care of for fire prevention. And that's like some really good stuff there.
Here's my environmental review story. Maybe this is really narrow maybe. Okay. But you know, I remember back when I was back in my field rep days, one of the communities that was assigned to me was clamoring for Caltrans to come in and clear out. It wasn't even a homeless camp. It was just like, there was a homeless camp on the other end of the freeway. And so under this bridge, the homeless folks would just use it as a big dumpster because it was kind of like this big, like it was like this big divot in the land, you know.
We call it the WX.
And so the community was clamoring for Caltrans to just come in with some dumpsters and just clear everything out. There's not even people living there. They've just used it as a dumpster. And Caltrans, well, yeah, you know, but we need to do environmental review. And I'm like, well, how about this? The environment's going to be better after you clean out the hepatitis from the fucking, you know, the environmental review took like 3 months. It's like, can't you just say we're going to be better, you know, we're going to be better off.
Real big issue in, you talk about the fire prone areas in California.
You should be able to just clean this stuff out and be like, this is going to be good for the environment.
No, but it's also landowners have a responsibility.
I'm sorry,
mandate.
That idea is ridiculous because it makes sense.
Up.
You know, welcome to the state assembly where down is up and hello's goodbye.
So back to health committee. Tomorrow you've got a hell of a
40 something bills. Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking at your agenda tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's a crazy day that this will drop before that.
Hey, just to let you know, we're at 50 minutes. We got to get you out of here, Pauline, in about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And we got to get into DaVita, right?
Yeah. We're going there now. We're not going to talk about the use of deadly force bill that's up in assembly.
Unless you have a quick reaction.
You know, I haven't even seen, I've read the bill. I haven't followed, obviously it'll be up in committee tomorrow. There'll be a lot of people in the Capitol. I'm watching the issue closely.
I'll be watching it from on TV because none of us are going to fit in 4202 tomorrow morning at 8:30 in the morning. So you've already passed out of your committee, Assembly Health Committee. Mm-hmm. The bill that's seen this year as the dialysis bill. Mm-hmm. Now, it's very different from Prop 8.
Thank you for recognizing that.
Last year. So Prop 8 said a flat cap on profits mm-hmm. from dialysis centers. So I was in South Sac yesterday. There are a bunch of DaVita, mm-hmm. Centers in South Sac. I was mm-hmm. getting my pho on. Vietnamese soup.
Oh, I was going to say, what?
Pho.
Oh.
Get my pho on.
Just look at your shirt, sorry.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. I need this shirt. So this is my Democratic, I think it was an Obama shirt. I don't know. But so you're carrying a bill this year that tries to go not on a flat profit cap for dialysis centers, and there are all kinds mm-hmm. of third party. Mm-hmm. So you have the individual, the patient, mm-hmm. you have the payer, so mm-hmm. health insurers, and then you have kind of the third party person that's actually providing the service. Mm-hmm. And so you're saying, okay, let's try to avoid these strange payments where a provider may be paying a patient to incentivize them to get off of the public health care systems and onto more reimbursable or higher reimbursement. This is like very hard to explain on a podcast.
I'll try.
But you're going to do
it. How about if I try to explain?
You're going to do it much better.
Yeah, Jim, explain it. I thought this was a labor beef. What's going on here?
It's not labor.
My bill is really pretty simple. There is a behavior that happens. And let me just walk you through this. So you've got dialysis companies that make contributions to the American Kidney Fund, which is a nonprofit. The American Kidney Fund provides support for people who are poorer, who need financial support to help them afford their care. About 4,000 altogether, in California. Half of those people are getting payments that help to pay their supplemental insurance. So kidney end-stage renal disease, where you need kidney dialysis, is one of the only condition that I'm aware of that gives you eligibility for the Medicare system right away, very, very quickly, regardless of your age. So that means the federal government has recognized this and goes back to the 70s. So anyway, so they have about half of the premium assistance, is what we'll call it, goes to the to help pay for a supplemental plan, a secondary plan, which happens a lot with people on Medicare. The other half goes to paying for people who have a traditional insurance plan. And the win for the dialysis company is that they can then charge their full fee, which is much higher than the Medicare reimbursement or much higher than Medi-Cal, and thereby generating significant profits out of that. So what bugs me and about this is very simple. The dialysis companies are making a contribution that they get a tax write-off for to the American Kidney Fund. The American Kidney Fund then buys a plan, and then the dialysis companies make a lot more money on the other end because of this higher reimbursement. And guess who's paying for it at the end of the day? Guess who's paying for all this? You and me. Thank you. Yeah. So we are paying for it in our higher premiums.
I tried to explain that in 45 seconds, and like he just took a minute and I lost you all.
We might cut out your attempt, Mr. Scott. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Hey, wait, so
you could add
explain
that.
I thought this was a labor beef. Am I totally wrong?
No.
This has nothing to do with labor.
That's nothing to do with labor.
No, but the interesting is...
You didn't talk about labor in your writings about this?
No. Okay. So you have... But the doctors don't like it.
No.
The health insurers do. I mean, it's very fascinating when you look at, the political dynamics, because you have the health insurers on one side. You have the doctors on the other side. You have social justice on mm-hmm. one side. You have other folks on the other side. And frequently, as we've talked about on this pod, like there's some interesting community organizations that jump on board that may have relationships with some of the, the moneyed interests, beyond just that normal, like the providers.
Okay. So where's the pushback coming from the clinics themselves who profit from this?
Yeah.
From the large.
I've actually seen these ads.
Mm-hmm.
It says, don't limit my my access to care, dialysis, no, life support.
All the time.
What like substantive policy arguments do they have to rely on?
I'm sorry, I'm struggling with that question, that answer, because I don't see it.
They think that
they're just making a killing, and they want.
They think lower profits, and this is doctors and the dialysis companies. Lower profits will provide fewer services in communities.
The challenge that I have with that is,
you know, deal with that.
Okay. That this industry is making huge profits. Their profit is much higher than many other sectors of the healthcare industry. Is in some cases as much as 18%. Profit. So I come from, and these are hard because I come from a business background. I don't want to, I'm not trying to, you know, get insert myself into that part of it, but it feels like to me that it is an overreach and it's padding the pockets of large companies when consumers like us are paying for that. And that's kind of at the basic level, what's motivated me on a lot of the things I'm working on, whether it's drug pricing or the pharmacy benefit managers or whatever. It's like, no, I feel like you guys are, that you're kind of gaming the system.
What's Prop 8 debate last year was, we're paying for it. This is largely a public cost.
Yeah, we're all paying for it.
So we're paying for it. And so
we'd like to pay a little less.
Most of us think, I voted against Prop 8. It was an overreach by SEIU, UHW, labor against the dialysis industry because there wasn't a solution in the legislature. And I think Mr. Wood's trying to find, okay, what is the solution this year that we can reach and not try and have an overreach one way or the other in the legislature.
Well, you did say SEIU.
Well, that was a sponsor for Prop 8.
But it's different.
It's a different overall discussion.
Yeah. Okay.
But,
okay.
You know, how do we find a solution in the legislature, maybe under Mr. Wood, so we avoid an extreme on the ballot, one way or the other?
Fair. Okay. So we're right at about 57 minutes. You got a busy day. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about that we've not been able to discuss, or any sort of parting thoughts?
Parting thoughts. I'll kind of finish it up with this. It is, the role I have with the health committee is a real challenging role. We kind of hit on this in the beginning, is that, you know, there are days that providers don't like me very much, and it's not, I don't have anything personal. I want people to understand it's not personal.
It's never personal.
It's never personal. It isn't for me anyway.
It's all in the game.
Then hospitals may not like what I'm doing, or health insurance plans may not like what I'm doing, or whatever. But there are what I consider to be bad behaviors out there that are costing consumers money. And that, you know, and so nobody's perfect and nobody's an angel. And if some of these larger groups would kind of police their own, we wouldn't have a lot of these bills. But you get some bad actors in the drug industry or in any of these modalities or parts of healthcare. And that's what we focus on because it's right in front of us. And so, but there isn't a movement of pharma to say to each other, knock it off. You're causing a problem.
Well, there's no incentive to.
Exactly. Because they're about trying to maximize their profits. And I get it.
The Oxy situation.
Yeah. So, and I,
oh man, yeah. Stain on the Sackler family soul, man. I mean, you know,
stain on a lot of souls.
Yeah.
Awesome. Anyway,
okay. I think that's a pretty good way to end it. Not to bring us all down.
way to go, Scott.
Down on
hey, Jim Wood, assembly member for the second assembly district, all around good guy. Thanks for making time in a packed legislative schedule.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Well, is there some special handshake?
There we go.
Okay. Awesome.